There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday Eve edition of the show. Well, it's coming up today. You want to interact with the show? It's pretty easy. The two easiest ways. There are others. Two easiest ways to call or text at 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Plus, if you got the FM Talk 106.5 app, first of all, you're cool because you got the app. But second of all, you have that microphone icon right there on the front page. All you got to do is press that microphone button, records a message, emails it back here to the station. All right, we can play it back here on the air. Also coming up on today's show, we'll talk a little bit about the weekend ahead and some things going on the weekend. We'll preview those later on in the show, but I want to start off and lead off batter on today's Midday Mobile and going back and forth in text, actually, with this man, and then emails, and then more text with the man. I'm going to have you pull the microphone close to you. It is a continuation of Veterans Month. Remember, we do this all November long. Veterans Day was Tuesday. It was awesome to be out there with y'all. But for us, it's the whole month honoring our local veterans. And Melvin Bell joins me in studio. Mr. Bell, thanks for coming in here.
Well, I appreciate it.
And
having me, Sean.
And it's good to have you in here as well. So as we get started here, a veteran, I'm going to guess. I take context clues. We'll see. I know that he wouldn't do this if it wasn't real. I see the crest on your shirt there. You are a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, there you go. The Cannon Cockers. I like that. We're going to have to get a picture of that shirt here. At reunion in Las Vegas. Good stuff. I can only imagine what Las Vegas looked like after a Marine Corps reunion. You know, y'all are good at, like, breaking stuff.
Well, that's the only thing they teach us how to do.
I'll say to you and the other Marine friends, I said this week, they were pointing out, well, it's our 250th birthday. Y'all don't look a year over 246, you Marines.
That's because all the crayon we eat on the weekends.
First of all, as we get started, thank you for your service to our country.
I appreciate it, but thank y'all for acknowledging us.
This community, this is natural to me. But when we saw some things come up in the state this year, I realized the rest of our state, maybe other areas of the country, aren't. I mean, we grew up here with a battleship in our backyard. You know, to me, having this robust South Alabama Veterans Commission and all the others is a normal thing. And then to look around the state and probably around the country that it's not this way everywhere.
No, because even in, I was stationed at Camp Pendleton back in the day. And the closest they got was the Queen Mary.
Okay. But it's an environment here, I think, because there's a lot of folks that retire from the military, come here, even if they're not from here, they end up here. You meet a lot of retired military folks who are like, oh, I'm from Michigan or I'm from, you know, California or whatever. And then so many Alabama as a state, we send as a percentage, I think, second to the most folks to the military of any state in the Union.
That is true.
And it's reflected here. I start off with this, too. I want to talk about your career, but let's talk about the start of your career. I asked this question first of many, many years ago, and people know many years ago because he has not been around in a while, but I asked this of a Marine that folks around here will know, Dr. Sidney Phillips.
Yes.
And it started with a conversation he and I had. Tell me about the day that you and Eugene Sledge signed up for the Marine Corps. He told his enlistment story. So since then on, 16 years, I've been asking, first question, your enlistment story. How'd that happen?
Well, really, it started out in high school. That was me and three friends. We was in ROTC together.
Okay.
And many of your listeners might know one of them. it was Paul Hubbard. He was the fireman who got ran over. They named the station down there.
Yes.
That was one of my three amigos, me, him, and my friend James Brown.
not the legendary James Brown, but...
he was named James Brown.
And pretty cool.
Well, we agreed when we was in school, because I was in the band. They was ROTC the whole time. And we was all going to go in the Marine Corps together.
Okay.
Well, Paul was the only one that got past the physical.
So wait a second. So y'all three go for the physical, and only Paul makes
it. Passed it.
Okay.
So we decided. I think James ended up going in the Army.
Okay.
And I decided later that I was going to go ahead and go in the Army also.
Okay.
But before school, before we could finish high school, though, I got this letter in the mail one day before I supposed to went up to the MEP Center.
Mm-hmm.
It says I had a scholarship to Florida A&M University.
Okay.
Band scholarship. So I called a recruiter. He said, "You ready to go?" I'm like, "I got a scholarship."
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to go to
what'd
college.
What'd you play? What'd you play in the band?
Actually, I play flute.
Okay.
I've been still. I can say that. You say it's funny, but.
You see Mr. Bell, Bereed, who played the flute.
42 years this year.
They didn't see that coming. They did not see
Bereed. I still have my original one I had in high school, and my original flute has been on all but one of my 7 deployments I've been on.
You took your flute on deployment?
I took it on deployment with me, including my last deployment I had with Enduring Freedom back in 1718 of this with the Army National Guard.
The flute playing Marine. So you decide, okay, so you're going to go in the Marine Corps, but you got this scholarship that says, hey, man, we're going to pay for you to go to college to come play in the band.
Yeah, so I
it's
took
gotta
that.
It's got to be a dream, huh?
I took that instead.
Okay.
But Florida A&M isn't the school I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to Grambling.
Okay.
But, and to make a long story short on that, I ended up meeting my first wife at that time. And I wasn't working. I was sitting at home. Then I got this phone call up. He said, "Hey, this is Sergeant Anderson."
Okay.
With the Marine Corps Recruiting Office. "You still interested in going into the Marine Corps?" And I was sitting on the sofa. I go, "Sure, why not?"
How old were you then?
21, 22.
Okay.
And so I said, "Okay." He said, "I'll come pick you up if you need to." I said, "Okay." So went down there, re-SFAB. Everything was good. Went through everything I needed to go through. And he said, "When you want to leave?" I said, "Whenever." So
he told the Marine Corps recruiter whatever. He said, "How about tomorrow?"
He said he set everything up, and we went down to the MEP Center, and I went down there, passed my physical, came back.
Okay, so as an older kid, you passed the physical that you didn't pass right out of high school.
Yes.
Okay.
Then when we got back, he said, so now you're going to have to break the news to your wife. I said, you tell her.
Yeah, you're the Marine. Go ahead.
You know. And at the time, she didn't like Marines because she had dated one a couple of years before she met me. So that said, she went, okay. And not too long after that, I left for Marine Corps training in Parris Island.
And that's year what? What year is that?
That was actually in 86.
86. Okay. You go in there, 86, there have been some movies made about that period as well in Marine Corps boot camp. Nothing easy.
You know what? I will put it this way. My expectation for the physicality of the Marine Corps in training was way up here. But the actual physical aspect of the training fell way short of my expectation. But the mental aspect of it, I was not expecting, was not prepared for.
And give us, like, for civilians out there, people who aren't Marines, what part of that? Like,
what a lot of it, everybody think the Marine Corps is all about me lift truck, ha, 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 me carry gun.
Yes.
And actually, they wanted people who can handle the stress. So a lot of the things they did was actually they used to weed people out as being stressed, putting stress on you. Sometimes it wasn't that you did something. Is your partner did something, mm-hmm. and now you're going to pay for it.
So we see that in the movies. That's how it's done.
That really took place. In a sense, though, it's like one person messed up, everybody else pay, but mm-hmm. the person who messed up.
Which is the worst.
It's the worst thing that happened. One, for instance, believe it or not, we had a guy who was in our platoon. You know what got him... got him put out of the Marine Corps?
What?
He fell down, broke down because he did not know how to make a bed. He was one of those raised with a nanny. He had never made a bed in his life until he got to basic training.
He's a man. He's over 18. He's never made a bed.
And all the other stuff, we got him through. It was just funny. He thought, why we had to wear the same color clothes every day, why we had to shower together every day, why do we have to do this every morning so early? But he got through all that. But he could not get those hospital corners of that bed tight enough to act for those for real, be able to bounce a quarter off of it. And one day he broke
that
down.
That was it.
That broke him mentally.
Not the PT, not the other.
Not the PT, not the stress, not the running up and down the stairs with mattress, not the doing the salute with the foot lockers and none of that stuff. Making a bed broke his will and
wow.
He quit.
It is it's a thing, you know, I was talking about the other day, recruiting levels coming back up. And one of the things growing up and watching Marines and different is the stress and the things you go through to become a Marine or different parts of the military, I think is a good thing. I think for outside looking to go in, I mean, you want to go into something that's tough because the time I see you in a uniform as a Marine, it tells me something without you having to tell me something, right? And I think as demands go back up, I think people are going, okay, I think I can do the challenge.
Well, a lot of the challenge you find out in the Marine Corps, there's actually three sides to the Marine Corps. You have what they call the division side, which is combat arms. Mm-hmm. Then you have base, which is all the support elements. And then you have the wing section. Now, you'll see a lot of times you see people, that we used to get mad at this because you hear all these guys be out in the field, they doing all this training. They're going, yeah, we do this training. We need to do it more often. All the division Marines who spent all their life in the field and always the ones supporting going like, how come they never interview us? We will tell them the truth. When you go on and
they're
spend
lying.
Yeah, they're like, what are they talking about? We've been doing this for the whole month.
Right.
They crying. They talking about how great 2 weeks is in the field. We going to 29 pounds for 3 months living in out of a truck in the desert. What are y'all talking about? So it's different aspects of it. And to me, everybody played a role in everybody, and everybody plays a role in what's going on. But I was a division Marine, combat arms, my entire enlistment, which means I out of my 10-year stay, I spent 5 of those deployed.
Five
of those deployed.
Wow. Wow. And you talk about it went through Enduring Freedom was your last.
No. Enduring Freedom was when I went to the National Guard. I was during my 10 years in the Marine Corps.
Right.
5 of those years, I was deployed. I was deployed with the MEB out on the Pacific. So I deployed in 87, 88. 89, I crossed decks. That means I didn't come back to the States. I crossed decks in Hawaii and went out with another MEB for 89.
You didn't even come home.
Didn't come back. Didn't come home. Came back and then deployed in 90. We were home in 90. We got back July 90 from a 6 months deployment on ship. And August 90, we were gone to Desert Storm, Shield.
Yep.
Shield. We was home like 23 days. And then we went left in August of that same year, deployed for Desert Shield, came back in May of 91. And the unit I would have been with, the unit I came back to deployed again in late 91, 92. They deployed against the Somalia.
Wow.
So during that time period, there was a lot of deployments going on, just like during for this Iraqi freedom. There's a lot of Marines that played a lot of parts that constantly deployed. Like we had, it was like we were like it's for when we first left, came home, we came back to work for PT in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gear was laid out on the deck. We're going like, what? Somebody going to the field? We get there and they goes, get dressed. We got to get them on the bus.
What?
All right, so we got dressed, got them on the bus. We found they was going 29 pounds to fly out to go to Desert Shield. Then by day, they said, you got any gear here? Nope, go home. Went home, grabbed our gear out of our closets we had there. Came back, and we were on the bus by noon.
Wow.
And that's all the notification we had for that for our deployment. Some Marines didn't even get that notice. They did whatever they didn't have. They left it. They left without it. That's how sometimes our notifications come for deployment. Wow. And other times we usually say we're going somewhere. We hurry up and we get there. And 12 hours later, we sleep on the ground somewhere. But this time it was just instantaneously. But I spent 10 years there. I also served in recruit training.
Yes.
Marksmanship and coaching for recruit training for MCRD San Diego. That was fun. The best time I ever had in the Marine Corps.
I wanted to talk about that. We're coming back from the break. More with Melvin Bell, Marine Corps. He's a Marine, forever a veteran of the Marine Corps, but always a Marine. Well, you can tell just sitting with the man. We'll continue the conversation next, right after the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Continue Veterans Month and a conversation with a man who, he's in the Marine Corps. He's about to tell us he gets back into service to our country, which is not surprising, Mr. Bell, because so many veterans I know continue to give back. But first, though, you're talking about range work. And this is, the point of the spear, Marine Corps, and being able to shoot is legendary. It's legendary. So if you're teaching people to shoot, then your shooting's pretty darn good.
Well, I always thought that if you were teaching, there was a lot of coaches downrange that were marksmen, not sharpshooters, not experts, but they could teach someone how to shoot, and they were good at it. And there was some who would shoot great, and they would just be like, why are you even down here? Well, right. Anyway, it was strange. Like I was saying earlier, we were talking, like, when I worked down at MCRD San Diego as a marksmanship instructor, I was the only one in our entire company that taught it that did not own a weapon.
And I asked you at the break, how'd you get good if you didn't own a weapon?
Well, the thing about it is, when I first started in the Marine Corps, my first weapon was an M60 machine gun.
Okay, a big one.
As a personal weapon. That means everywhere I went, including sleep, I strapped this 25-pound weapon on me and took it everywhere I went.
You got the build to carry it. I'll give you that.
Oh, well, no. When I first got this weapon, I was maybe still 6 feet and about 155 pounds.
I wonder you had the build now from carrying it.
So that's where we started. And as an instructor, we learned how to shoot all the small arms weapons because that's what we taught for recruits and regular Marines. So it was much fun. But recruit training, I think, was most gratifying because you could see the results of your work right then.
Yes.
You see the light come on in somebody's eyes.
You had moment. You're like, I made a difference with this kid.
Yes, because you had to become a social worker and everything for them. You had to figure out what make them work. Mm-hmm. Would make them tick and not look like shoot yourself in the foot while trying to show them something like shooting, standing at 200 yards and shooting the target standing up with whatever they got on their weapon.
Right.
And not missing. So they can't hit. Give me that weapon. I'll show you. The last thing you think in your mind, Lord, don't let me miss
this. you talked about this. So after you come back to Mobile, 99 or so?
I got back here and I got out. Once I got out, I worked out in California for a couple of years. And then in 99, I moved back here.
Okay.
And I ended up working with the post office in 2001. And while I was working there, I had some alumni from, I went to Williamson High School.
Okay, there you go.
And some alumni who was also former Marines, Marines who was working there, he said, I put my stripes back on. You all put yours on. Go ahead and get that retirement. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. He said, man, go to guard. You enjoy it. So So I let him talk me into going back, putting the stripes on and in the Guard. So I did 18 years in the Guard. Wow. I retired just 2.5 years ago.
But we thank you for your service to our country. I mean, it's awesome. And it's awesome that our community here of veterans is so robust. And there's men like you and women out there that serve our country and continue to come back and then put the stripes back on and go to the Guard. It's a testament.
Well, I didn't go back to combat arms, though. I went into communications this time.
See, with age comes wisdom, right?
Work smarter, not harder.
That's correct. That's correct. What do you, as we close out here, got a minute here. Your view of, like, the kids these days, like, you're looking at the, you know, the 18-year-old Melvins of today. What do you tell them?
Well, I guess I'll tell them the same thing I told my son. He went in the Guard for about 7 years. 7 years is that. It is what you make of it. It's a chance, opportunities to do things that you probably won't get a chance to do anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And not many people will get an opportunity to be a part of it. Like, you can go in, you come out there with this fresh, where it's as simple like this. I was supposed to have been going in as a computer technician. And, you know, you go to school, you get all these degrees, and you get all you, and all it is you go to school to take these tests to get these certifications.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while working in the National Guard in the communications field, I got all the certifications without ever having to go to school.
I like it.
Because I had to have them to operate with the equipment that I operated. So they required us to get all these certifications. And they said, what you going to do with them? I said, enjoy them while I can.
Well,
but
said.
I tell them the opportunities are there to serve your country, get an education, and do some things that you can talk about to your grandkids.
Well,
and I would not have changed a thing.
Well, we appreciate you telling us about it. Mr. Melvin Bell, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Shauna. It's nice to be on the show. But the mailman will continue to text in.
There he is, the mailman.
Washington.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along on this Thursday edition of the show. Big thank you to Melvin Bell, one of our many, many veterans this month. You know, we've been doing this, a decade or so? Veterans Month here at FM Talk 106.5. Even though with Veterans Day and the big celebration and our live event on Tuesday, we talked to local veterans all the month of November long, and we'll continue that. Dan and Dalton are doing it, of course, here on Midday Mobile as well. So we'll continue that. And by the way, too, I've said this leading up to it in September and October, but if there's something we haven't talked to, maybe it's you, maybe it's a family member or a friend, a local veteran, put them in touch with me by sending an email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, S-E-A-N at fmtalk1065.com, and put me in contact with them, and we'll get them on the show. All right, without further ado, there's been some ado here, but without any further ado, my friend, he's with the Tennessean. You see his work on the, I don't know if silver screen anymore, on the screen, I don't know if it's silver, with the Ballad of Davy Crockett. You listen to his music with Wasted Bacon, and you get to hear him on this show. It's my friend Cameron Smith. Hey, man. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to press the other button. There we go. Now, hey, man.
Hey, Sean, the government's open. We can all celebrate now.
Yeah. How'd you survive the shutdown? How did it work on you?
It was pins and needles, touch and go. But now we have the government back up, and we're still going to have an inefficient government. So, sweet.
Well, I mean, it is to some degree the exact CR that Democrats had, with a few changes, but the exact CR that the Democrats had voted on when Biden was in office, right?
Yes, and it goes through January 30th. So we are going to do this again very quickly.
But I wonder if the sword of Damocles, right, of the shutdown has lost its edge going forward now. Because people just go through, I mean, if another shutdown comes up, most people will say, well, as long as they have air traffic control working and figuring out how the SNAP benefit thing goes, well, who cares?
Yeah, Sean, I'm actually right there with them. I mean, we have a new record shutdown, and most of America is yawning. Like, well, you may have had some travel difficulties. Now, I think Democrats knew that if this had gone through Thanksgiving and holiday travel had been disrupted for everybody, It would have been a big deal. We'll see. I think there's still rumblings that the air traffic controller situation, the canceled flights, everything may spill into Thanksgiving. But yeah, I mean, this was at least a handful of Democrats saying, you know what? I think I like my job and I'm going to vote to keep this open and we can fight again in January. And I think it was politically smart for them. But Sean, I'm concerned that we are becoming accustomed to this idea of non-essential employees. And a lot of Americans, myself included, is saying, wait a minute, why do we have so many non-essential employees? And do I care if they're not working? Because by definition, you're telling me they're non-essential. Doesn't mean they're great people. But if the job's not essential, why is the federal government doing it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just there's always going to be some, right? I mean, there's always going to be. But the percentage of it that didn't affect people is something. I think there's something to be said for that. And by the way, too, y'all, Cameron and I don't get to visit during the week like we want to. So what he said about Thanksgiving, we didn't rehearse that ahead. I said last week, the cudgel here is Thanksgiving week. They're going to get this thing done because neither party wants anything to do with, you know, a diminishment of 10% or plus of flights during the week of Thanksgiving. Yeah, that's the effect. That's what drove politics in Washington.
Yes, 100%. And I think this is, I mean, it's sad that this is where we are. But, I mean, again, we will, I would be shocked if we don't have another shutdown at the end of January.
Okay, let's talk about this, too. The news drop yesterday. Now, of course, in the political sphere, people are talking about how this is, you know, this is the smokescreen for Democrats that kind of lost this shutdown, the dropping of these emails from the Epstein files. And so, therefore, if I'm interested in the Epstein files, let me get the logic right that's been thrown at me. If I'm interested in this, then I'm for the Democrats and not for Trump. Can I chew gum and walk too? Can I say, hey, Democrats lost this one, you know, Republicans held together, but yes, I'm still interested in what's in the Epstein files, and I don't think I'm crazy.
You could probably walk, chew gum, and bait a hook at the same time, Sean. I mean, you're a talented guy. But this is the game the administration's been playing, which I think is dumb. Mike Johnson's been at the forefront of this, and I like Mike Johnson. I think he's a good speaker on many fronts. This is just about transparency. I don't think it's shocking to anybody that Donald Trump is in emails related to Epstein because he knew the guy. He's in pictures with the guy.
And he never claimed that he didn't know the guy. I mean, like some of the stuff is like he already said, I know the guy, you know?
Yeah, if you're going to look, if there's something there that says, hey, Donald Trump was cavorting with underage girls, now we have an issue. But until then, the idea of you know a scumbag, well, guess what? He's in New York real estate. So I'm sure that Epstein's not the only one. The problem here is, it's gone too far into this, we don't want transparency, or we want transparency that we control, which, as you and I both know, isn't transparency.
Right.
And then the marching line is, well, Trump said that if you want transparency, you're supporting the Democrats. And so, you know, many Republicans are saying, well, see, this is Democratic support. It's not. It's just reasonable, conservative, transparent government. It's not that complicated.
Okay, well, we're on the subject of the Oval Office, too, or at least policy members that work for the president. So we're going to get a tariff break on. I mean, this is what I was talking about early on, the tariffs. I understand tariffing things that we're head-to-head competing with people on, but we don't do a lot of coffee and bananas in the United States. I mean, people down here have some banana plants in their backyard, but, I mean, and that makes sense if we can't produce something. So they're going to give us – what's happening here, Robbie? I heard this coming out today from Bessent.
Well, I wrote a column on this pointing out that we literally don't make enough coffee for what we consume, and it's not particularly close. We can basically grow some in Hawaii, but it is a drop in the bucket in terms of what we consume. And I want to put this where the goats can get it. This whole tariff thing is dumb as a box of rocks because it drove the price of coffee through the ceiling. We don't produce it. And then people started realizing, why is my coffee $9? And it's not, it's literally because of the tariffs. And then Bessent and Trump and others come in and say, you know what? We're going to provide relief for the thing we caused. And I think we just need to call a spade a spade. if you want to do tactical tariffs to bring down trade barriers, I'm with you. We can do that to make sure that our products that are leaving the country get the same deal as their products coming in.
Yep.
I'm fine with that. But this is what we in the business call a self-own, because there was no need for this. This was dumb. We are not combating any issue. There's no national security concern here. It is simply, well, we're going to slap tariffs and we're going to make our coffee more expensive for consumers. They're not going to like that. And then we're going to act like we did them a favor by undoing the thing we did. And that's what's happening here.
And while we're on this track as well, and I understand that this is not, nobody's for, Dan and Dalton talked about it the other morning. They're correct. Nobody's forcing anybody to take a 50-year mortgage. Then nobody would be forced to. And there's actually, I found out the other day, there is a 40-year mortgage out there. I didn't know anything about that. But it's a solution. And then I guess Trump has been asking for interest rates to be lowered. But they're saying, okay, we're going to solve this housing issue by offering a 50-year mortgage. That's not that's a Band-Aid on a large wound there. That's not what we need to do to fix it. It's also a bad fiscal decision for anybody out there listening. But
yeah, sure. Just like, let's enslave the American consumers to lifetime debt. I love it. It's a great it's basically doing what we do at the federal level, but personally. Yeah, this has just been a run of bad calls for the Trump administration, which this is part of the authenticity, right? Trump is like, I want to try things. I'm going to float this trial balloon. And sometimes it goes over like it's made of lead. The 50-year mortgage is one of those things. Now, folks tried to spin it. He also, you know, decided in what can only be characterized as a not very good interview with,
Laura Ingraham.
Laura Ingraham.
Yeah.
Where he said, well,
H-1B visas.
Yeah. We don't have the talent here in America. We need to go get it. Oh, well, that sounds pretty MAGA. Oh, we need 600,000 Chinese students to keep our universities afloat. Like, one, what are you talking about? And two, wait, what? This doesn't make any sense. And I think a lot of people understandably said, well, okay. Like, I'm all for international talent poaching. I always support that. But this is different, right? This is just a random declaration. And then, yes, he's famous for saying they're not sending their best people. But then to say we aren't the best people either doesn't really endear you to your voters.
No, it does. And I think in a lot of these things, President Trump's trying to fix problems. But it is, and probably it's easier to do, but these are short-term ideas. Right. I mean, I think the complaint of the president saying, hey, we got interest rate issues and Jay Powell needs to get on board. Those are better discussions than saying to fix this thing, we're just going to offer longer terms. Or you know, in the case of, we don't have the talent here, instead of saying we're going to double down, it's going to be a Manhattan project to get people trained up for these jobs. Now we just need more H-1B visas, which is kind of what he campaigned against.
Yes. Actively campaigned against was we are shutting down the immigration spigot. We are going to cut off the talent inflows. And now he is saying the exact opposite thing. This was America first. And now it's sort of like kind of America first-ish. Yeah. And I think the situation here is we need to actually I know this is going to sound weird, Sean, but there's a reason Congress has jobs is to basically put some of these ideas out there in the form of legislation. And then we debate them and we kind of refine them rather than like, we're going to throw out a thing. Oh, nobody likes that thing. Let's throw out another thing. This should not be how we really set things that impact the American people day to day.
Okay. So with that, in defense of the president, we've been in the cycle. You and I've been talking about it ever since we've been on there, that the legislative branch has just foregone things that they're supposed to do that lets it end up being in the purview of the executive or the judicial. In some, I mean, it is a lack of doing their job in the legislative branch.
Yeah, we need to fire a lot of people who represent us. I want to be real clear about that, because a lot of these folks are like keyboard warriors who want to tell us about, you know, how awesome they are on Twitter, and they can't do their job. And if you can't do the job, you need to be fired. And that's just a stark reality. And we got to stop get off the X machine, get off social media, and sort of look at your family, your community, and how often do you hear from your elected officials? And if they're not solving real challenges your family, your community's facing, they're probably not doing much.
There you go. Speaking of the X machine, people want to get you over there. How do they find you?
At D. Cameron Smith over there. And y'all join the conversation. And look, I put out opinions and thoughts and research all the time. Tell me where I'm wrong. That's how I get better.
Very good. And I will talk to you next week, if not before. All right. Stand by.
See you, brother.
There he goes. Cameron Smith. And we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. 343-0106 is how you get in touch.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:53, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Check in with my buddy Blaine at Parrish Tractor in Robertsdale, and you want to talk? I want to talk some skid steers too. I'm running the Kubota is the 75 that I'm running right now.
Yep,
the high flow.
That's right. You got the 75-3, the new model high flow. We've got a bunch of those in stock right now, Sean, with all the different attachments as well. Whether you're looking for grapples, pallet forks, brush cutters, mulchers, we got it all right now. So. Still qualifies for that zero interest financing. If you're not looking to purchase one brand new, we've got used ones as well as we have them in our rental fleet as well.
Yeah, and I will tell y'all just if you got a piece of land and you're trying, it has been what, 3 days on this machine, and the changes I've made with that machine are unbelievable. I mean, y'all are cleared. I mean, I'm using a brush cutter, but I mean, you can get so much work done. It's amazing.
You can. You can, for sure. We've got, like I said, we've got the new ones and we've got used ones. So if you're not in the market for a brand new one, we've got used as well that we've been trading in this week and all of last week. So we've been getting plenty of trucks in with them. So come by, see us, check them out.
Okay, what do you have on the RTV side? I know what you have. What he has, because I run a Kubota RTV, but mine is older, so I have pangs of jealousy every time I see what's new in RTVs. Talk about what you got on the lot.
Well, those have been popular lately as well with hunt season. We've got all the diesel and gas models in stock in all the different colors as well. Still qualify for zero interest financing through Kubota on the RTVs, so come by, check them out. We've got a pile of them here in Robertsdale, so come check them out for sure.
Okay, and we know about seeing you in person in Robertsdale. Pretty easy place to find, but I may or may not spend a little time during my workday looking at the website because there's so much to do over there. Tell people about that.
Yeah, so we've got all of our new and used, all of our pre-owned trade-ins on our website as well, so you can go check them out at parrishtractor.com. We have 8 different store locations, so if there's something that you're interested in that's maybe in Gonzales, Louisiana, I can normally have that here within a couple days. So don't be afraid to call and ask because I can get it here. We've got trucks running all week. So parrishtractor.com, check out the new and used inventory tabs.
Good stuff. Blaine, I appreciate you, man. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. There goes Blaine at Parrish Tractor. And it's been a heck of a productive week, I'll say that. Let's see. Let's go to – oh, you know what? I want to I want to go to the Penny story. Before next hour, coming up, Kyle Hamrick from Landnap joins us in a few. Also, coming up in the next hour, Stephen Carr from The Shoulder joins us. But first, the Penny story. Listened to Dan and Dalton this morning talking about this is what I wanted from Doge. There were other things, but this is the kind of stuff that – I don't think should be. I'm waiting for Big Penny, the lobbyist for Big Penny, to come out. But this just makes sense. Yes, I have a bunch of pennies, and I think I'm going to control the, you know, corner the market on pennies. But if you didn't hear the story, like, so U.S. ended production of the penny yesterday, abandoning the one-cent coins that were embedded in American culture for more than 230 years, but became nearly worthless. Now, I still pick them up. I think there's probably youngsters that don't. But this is a—I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing because, well, speaking of a Doge-like world, it cost almost 3 cents, which is funny. It cost 4 pennies to make 1 penny. Even though it was introduced in 1793, the penny back then could buy a biscuit, a candle, or a piece of candy. Now, most of them are cast aside to sit in jars or junk drawers. Yeah, big jars and water. I have cornered the market on pennies. I can't wait for them to go up in value once there's some scarcity to them. But yeah, that is the kind of stuff that I hope we look at those kind of stories in our government and spending out there and go, if it takes us 4 pennies to make 1 penny, maybe something's wrong here. And this, think about this too, with inflation, right? So you've got the penny is trending even further down out there. So I don't know. Now people have complained that you won't get the something for $1.99 or $2.99 or something like that because you won't be able to make change. I think we can run that gauntlet and survive as a republic out there. But yes. No more productions of pennies, so time to start pouring them out of those jars at your house. All right, coming back, Kyle Hamrick from Lanyap and Lanyap Mobile.